I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Warning, you're about to enter the arena and join the battle to save America with your host, John Parnell.
What's up, battle crew? What day is it? It's Tuesday. And it's a great day to be an American, folks. And from sea to shining sea and everybody in between, welcome, Patriots. Got a huge show for you today. Actually, let me just get right into the rundown right now to give you a sense of what's coming down the pike. We're going to talk about this Alec Baldwin video. Somehow he's the good guy to me. I'll tell you why here in a second. 2024, the election in 2024, it's important, but it's not the final battle for this country. I'm going to tell you why very, very soon. And in that same vein, I'm not sure. I was thinking a lot about this today, but I'm not sure that Democrat cities can survive. I mean, it's kind of crazy. I'll break it all down for you. We're going to get into the Trump fake hush money case. The first witness was on the stand today. Talk about Trump's second term and what that could potentially look like and what it needs to be like. Pennsylvania's primary today and a flame-throwing robot dog. Basically seems like the worst idea ever. All of that and so much more on Battleground Live. Can I talk to you real quickly about school? My kids have what's called PSSAs today. Now, PSSAs are basically like Pennsylvania's version of the standardized tests. I don't like them. I don't. In fact, I think they're more for the teachers than they are for the students. If it were up to me, if this were my sole decision, it's not. But if it was, I'd probably opt my kids out because they're that pointless. And I don't know if you all know this about me, but I actually didn't take school super seriously as a kid. Looking back now as an adult, I wish probably in, you know, junior high, high school, I took school more seriously, but I was just rarely, if ever, inspired by my teachers. I didn't really care what they had to say, and I found myself bored. And I was in a public school with huge classes. It really wasn't about whether public school or private schools. I ended up going to a Catholic school. But really what it was for me is I kind of got lost in the sauce in these big classes, felt like a number, didn't really get a whole lot of individual attention. And then I went to Greensburg Central Catholic right here in Western Pennsylvania, and I braided my faith with my education and had smaller classes. And that was kind of made all the difference for me. But I don't like this standardized testing, and all of our kids are doing it right now. And one of the things that drives me crazy about all of this, not just the education system and how it's brazenly liberal now. I mean, it's these communist mouth breathers have infiltrated even our schools. Now, don't get me wrong. There are lots of great conservatives at my kids' schools, and I'm not lumping them in with communist mouth breathers, nor am I saying that those people are communist mouth breathers. I'm not. But it drives me crazy. Just let me vent here for a second. When I'll get these emails from my kids' teachers, and one in particular, it's like, it's always, if it's a nice day here in Western Pennsylvania, which at this time of year, it's kind of rare. We don't get a whole lot of nice days. We'll get an email saying, well, hey, enjoy the nice weather. Make sure you get outside and enjoy the nice weather. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. And then I look further down in the email, and there's like a list of 20 things for homework, social studies, math, science. Take these kids an hour, 2 hours plus to do their homework. So how the hell are they supposed to enjoy the nice weather? You got kids sitting in school for 8 hours a day, then come home, in many cases have extracurricular activities or sports, and then they have 2 hours worth of homework. Do these kids ever get any time to just relax? And by the way, maybe go outside and enjoy the sun? No. It's like our kids in today's day and age, they are just fully It's almost difficult to escape school. And listen, you know, I know that there are people out there probably would say school is important. Kids should focus on school. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't. I'm saying that I think kids need balance. I don't think kids need to be immersed in academics all the time, spend 8 hours in school, and then come home and do 2 hours of homework and miss the first day of sun in the first day of a long time, in a long time. But part of my frustration with a lot of this is, you know, just the curriculum is written by these crazy, by and large, crazy liberals. Now, again, there are lots of great conservative teachers, but a lot of the higher ranking people in the education system, school board superintendents and above, the people that are writing policy, people that work at the Department of Education, which, by the way, is fundamentally unconstitutional and shouldn't exist, they're liberals. And it frustrates me having five kids in school, because as Wendy Bell likes to say on the radio, I'm just a mom with common sense. Well, on the flip side of that, I'm just a dad, you know, with common sense. I'm just a father that has five kids that's not trying to raise liberals. And it's hard when your kids are fully immersed in school, 8 hours a day, 2 hours of homework a night. And it frustrates me that our party, our movement as conservatives, we have ceded that battlefield to the left, and I think it's cost us a lot. And most of the issues that we're seeing in our society today are because of that. And so that brings me to this video with Alec Baldwin. And I made you a promise on this show that I'm not going to get into conservative influencer battles. I don't give a damn about that stuff. I want to talk about saving the country because I believe that we have a limited time to do it. It doesn't mean that we can't have fun while we're doing it. But this Alec Baldwin stuff, you know, it's important to me to talk about for a couple of reasons, because I think it highlights just it's a microcosm of what sacrificing our education system to radical communist leftists has left us with in today's day and age. So there's Alec Baldwin. Let me set up this video for you, or this sound for you. Alec Baldwin is in a coffee shop trying to get some coffee. He's accosted by a pro-Hamas sympathizer, complete whack job, who starts screaming at him, right? Starts filming him. And Alec Baldwin basically pulled an Alec Baldwin. Listen and watch, and then we'll talk.
Please stay free Palestine one time. Why did you kill that lady? You killed that lady and got no jail time? No jail time, Alec?
Sorry.
No jail time, Alec. You're putting innocent people in jail, Alec Baldwin.
I'm so sorry.
Free Palestine, Alec, just one time, and I'll leave you alone. I'll leave you alone, I swear. Just say free Palestine one time. One time. One time.
Call the police.
One time, Alec. You know he's a criminal. You know he's a fucking criminal. Come on, Alec. Just say free Palestine one time. One time. Just one time. Please. And I'll leave you alone. Free Palestine. Fuck Israel. Fuck Zionism. Please say it. One time.
Could you give me one quick favor?
So let me just tell you something. You know, it's bad. You know that these protesters, these free Palestine pro-Hamas protesters, you know that they're on the wrong side of history when they got me feeling bad for super douche Alec Baldwin. Now, to be fair, Alec Baldwin is very, very funny, but I have thought that he has been a super douche for quite some time. In fact, Commander Melanie used to try to convince me to watch this show called 30 Rock, and I refused to do it because I knew Alec Baldwin was in it, and I just thought, of course, he was a super douche, and he is. I'm right about that, and I don't think Melanie would dispute that. But just all that aside, she's very persuasive, convinced me to watch it, and the show really is delightful. It's funny. It's really funny, and Alec Baldwin plays this conservative in it, and he's hysterical. But in real life, he's generally speaking a super douche. But here we have a situation now where I find myself somehow on his side here. And It's because these Free Palestine, pro-Hamas whack jobs are crazy. And our education system made them crazy like this. And this woman, she's the host of a podcast called Crackhead Barney and Friends. And I want to add this to the stage. And for our friends who are listening to the show, I'll just describe it for you. This is the Free Palestine whack job who accosted Alec Baldwin. She runs around in a diaper and she puts tape on her nipples and accosts people. She's kind of insane. She gets in people's faces all the time. But again, this leads me to, I think, a much larger point. You know, I don't care about Alec Baldwin. I think he's, generally speaking, not a good person. He's a liberal, and there's part of this. It gives me joy to see liberals going after liberals, because eventually these communist losers will attack each other. I mean, that is the religion of communism. It always ends in disaster with them attacking each other. So part of me, as a conservative, brings me joy to see that, although I do think Alec Baldwin was, I feel bad for the guy in that situation. But the media is framing these people, these types of protesters, the woman who runs around in a diaper that puts tape on her boobs, framing these protesters as these basically virtuous anti-war protesters. Washington Post headline, "Police arrest anti-war protesters." Of course, that's a lie as usual. These aren't, let me just break this down for you folks in case, I'm sure many of you already know this, but in the event that some of you don't, these aren't Vietnam War protesters. What you're seeing on these college campuses and now some of these riots in these cities, these aren't, you know, hippie flower children type, as disgusting as those hippies were. What you're seeing today is far, far worse. Do you know why they're far, far worse? It's because these college kids, they're pro-genocide of the Jews. They are pro-Holocaust number two of the Jewish people. It really is kind of unbelievable that now, because these kids are so radical, and by the way, these aren't leftists as you and I would understand them. They're Democrats in name only, so to speak, but they're so radical that they've aligned themselves with a group that is diametrically opposed to what even the modern day Democrat Party believes. And they're the modern day Democrat Party, the new Democrats, they're insane, right? But I would say, you know, the vast majority of Jewish people in this country, by and large, are liberal. Their views are more in line with probably a lot of the Democrat Party than these kids on campus. They're probably, their views are kind of in line, I guess. But think about it like this: these supposed liberals on these college campuses that are out there protesting, I guess what I'm getting to is that their views are more in line, the views of these crazy college protesters are taking up that of Islamic extremism, Hamas, and Palestinians. These are people that stone women to death for walking outside without a hijab. These are people that throw gay people off of a roof. So these protesters that are out there calling for genocide against the Jews, they're not traditional liberals in the sense that we all know and understand. What they're advocating for is more in line with Nazism and the death of entire groups of people because they believe differently than what they do. That's the truth. These aren't Democrats. They're not new Democrats. They're not liberals. They're not classical liberals. They're not for tolerance. They're not for free speech. These kids are worse than fascists. And you know it's bad. One, when you're feeling bad for Alec Baldwin. But two, when Morning Joe Scarborough actually sounds reasonable and gets something right. You heard me correctly. Here's Joe Scarborough this morning talking about some of these protests. Listen.
One of my pet peeves seems to be one of your pet peeves, and that is, 2 million people have been killed in the Sudan civil war. I haven't seen a protest at NYU for that. Assad killed 500 Arabs. I didn't see colleges burned down. 500,000 Arabs killed by Assad. Saddam Hussein killed over 1 million Muslims in wars. I gassed them. I didn't see protests there. And yet your school is shut down right now because Israel is responding to the worst attack against Jews worldwide since the Holocaust. Help us sort through that.
And we can debate that response.
I don't know algebra, but I'm pretty good at the common denominators here and why there's no common denominators in all of these. It's just that it's Jews defending their homeland. Because if you look at the numbers, even with American wars, they don't add up.
Well, first off, good to be with you, and I especially appreciate your leadership on this issue. I'll give you some more numbers. 2,200 American servicemen killed at Pearl Harbor. We go on to kill 3.5 million Japanese, including 100,000 in one night. 2,800 Americans in 9/11. We go on to kill 400,000 people in Afghanistan and Iraq. We weren't accused of genocide. You had, if Mexico had elected a jihadist cartel to run their country, and then they incurred into Texas, and on a per capita basis killed 35,000 people, or the population of the University of Texas, and on the way back took the freshman class at SMU hostage and hid them under tunnels, what would we do? It'd be the Great Sonora Radioactive Parking Lot. But Jews are not allowed, and Israel is not allowed to prosecute a war. And they are prosecuting a war more humanely than we have done. The ratio of combatants to civilians is of civilian death to combatant mortality is lower than it was in Mosul, lower than it was in Japan, lower than it was in Germany. So there's just a different standard for Jews in Israel when it comes to prosecuting a war. They're allowed to fight back to a truce.
Now, listen, you won't hear me say this often, but I actually agree with what Joe Scarborough and Scott Galloway are saying right there. There's a ridiculous double standard in how people treat the Jews worldwide. And the rise of anti-Semitism in the world, not just here in America, but across the world, has me very, very concerned. It's not because, it's regardless of how you feel about war. I despise war. I want to avoid it at all costs. You know how I feel about this. But it's about being on the moral right side of things. It's about seeing things with moral clarity. But getting back to these kids on college campuses, this concerns me a lot, because if you think that things are bad now in this country, and believe me, they are bad right now. Think of the new Democrat Party, animated corpse that is Joe Biden, AOC, all the lunatics in the Democrat Party that we go after on a daily basis on this show. These people are intergalactic stupid. They have a total, complete lack of understanding of how the world works. It's unbelievable to me that these mouth breathers found their way down to Washington and are some of the most powerful people in this country. But if you think things are bad now, you just wait until some of these kids grow up and they make their way into the workforce. They find themselves on the boards of woke companies. We think corporations are woke now. Just wait 10, 15 years. You think, you know, our politicians, the new Democrat Party, you think they're radical now? Just wait 10 to 15 years when some of these psychos are running and they hold office here in America. They will make AOC look like Winston freaking Churchill or Abraham Lincoln. This is going to happen. And I'm telling you, folks, this is not, you know, the old phrase of, you know, if you're 18 and you're liberal and you're not liberal, you don't have a heart. If you're 35 and you're not conservative, you don't have a brain. This isn't one of those scenarios where, you know, kids that are just 18, 19 in their early 20s are just liberal because they just they're just naive in how they see the world. And at some point, you know, they end up seeing their paycheck. They see the taxes. They see the cost of big government. And all of a sudden, they're conservative, and they're conservative real quick. That's not going to happen with these kids. These kids won't moderate. They won't. They won't grow up one day and say, wow, look at my paycheck. Look at all these taxes. I'm a conservative now. That's not going to happen. No way. These kids are going to grow up and they're going to become more extreme. Like I said, they're going to enter the workforce. They're going to be on corporate boards. They're going to run for office. So if you think we save our country if Trump wins in 2024, I mean, this race is extremely important. We've got to get Trump back in office. I'm not saying that it's not important, but it's one battle in what is a much, much larger war.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course. The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
We really, truly have our work cut out for us in this country. And the reason for that is that you see these psychos on these college campuses, folks. You see it. They are not afraid to espouse what are insane views. Seriously, take a step back and listen to what they're saying. They're calling for genocide of the Jewish people, who, by the way, they're the ones who are on the receiving end of a terrorist attack that killed thousands of other people. So, like, it's just unbelievable that they are not, that they are so out front with their stupid ideas that it makes them dangerous. Most conservatives, most people like me and you, we just want to live our lives. We want the government out of our lives. We want to work hard. We want to raise our family. We want to have dinner together as a family, maybe have a few drinks together at night. But by and large, we want peace in our lives. We don't pay attention to this stuff. But mark my words, this country, if you think it's bad now, 10 to 15 years from now, when these psychos enter, it's going to get worse. It's our job to make sure that that does not happen. We have got to talk to our children and our grandchildren, as much as it pains me to say this, because I think that generally speaking, I ran for office twice, so I understand, you know, what I'm saying here. But we've got to convince our children that running for office, local, state, and federal, is important. Because if they don't, these people are going to occupy county commissioner spots. These people are going to occupy school board spots. These people are going to find their way into the state legislative chamber. They're going to find their way into state senate seats. They're going to find their way into local offices. They're going to infiltrate everything. They'll be in Congress. They'll be in the House. They'll be in the Senate. They'll be everywhere. And without a counterbalance to this, that is our children and our grandchildren, we will lose this country, because these people, again, make AOC look like the stateswoman of the year. So I have here in front of me some thoughts on Democrat cities and what I believe are their inevitable collapse. And I do believe that it is likely that something like this happens in our lifetime, barring some drastic change in culture or change in leadership, not just a change in leadership, but a willingness to take action and do something about it. I just think it's damn near unavoidable. When you think about the situation in the cities, cops are scarce. Criminals are on the rise. It's really not safe in these Democrat-run hellholes that used to be once great American cities. Look, okay, I'm going to put this up on the screen, and if you're watching, it's going to be a little bit easier. But if you're listening, I'll explain it to you. But this is Oakland, California. another car with someone hanging out of it, groups of people. It looks like a scene out of Mad Max Thunderdome. People in the street, black people, tires, you hear the tires just spinning around in a circle, in a circle, in a circle. I mean, it looks like Snake Plissken and Escape from New York or something like that. But that, what you saw right there, is really the case in so many Democrat-run cities that it's hard to imagine them coming back from where they're at right now. You know, Bongino always says, you know, well, when things get bad enough, people's it's not bad enough yet. He says this on a show all the time. It's not bad enough yet. In other words, when things get bad enough, people will shift their perspective and say, you know what, the hell with this. I'm not voting for these ridiculous Democrats who sow nothing but chaos and have done nothing for me. I'm going to vote for Republicans because what do I have to lose? I disagree with my buddy Dan Bongino on this. And the reason why I do is because, let me ask you a question, actually. Start this with a question. Do you believe, and go ahead and answer in the live chat and I'll watch. I know there's like a little bit of a delay here, but do you believe that Democrats rig elections, especially in heavily Democrat areas? Do you believe that the Democrats rig elections? And I suspect that most of you will say yes. Okay? And if we believe the Democrats rig elections, then we also have to look at the power structure in some of these Democrat cities. We're talking Democrat mayors, Democrat DAs, Democrat police chiefs, Democrat auditor generals, Democrats at every single place of power within these cities. So look at this. Yes, yes, absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. Yes, Dems do. Oh, hell yeah. Yes. I mean, literally 100% yes. Demand a 78, 100% yes. Chipper, hell yeah. Rob Dog, yes. Beth Parm, yes. D-Manuel, yes. Shark D, yes. You're 100%. Dems do rig elections. So if they rig elections and then they hold every position of power in a city, let me then ask you this. Does it matter if things get bad enough? I mean, if people's perspective changes, if their perspective changes and they say, I'm voting for Republicans now because things are just so bad. If Democrats rig elections and if Democrats hold every position of power, they're going to rig elections in their favor. They're not going to let go of their power just because people's perspective changes. So what's going to happen to these cities? I showed you that video of Oakland, California that, honest to God, looked like it was taken right out of a Mad Max movie. I mean, it looked like a post-apocalyptic world. This is reality in Democrat-run cities. It's just going to continue this slow descent into hell into these cities. There's no amount of voting in these heavily Democrat cities that's going to get people out of this. And so you already see what's happening. You have selective political prosecutions. You have criminals who are celebrated, DAs in these cities, letting people out with no bail. They're essentially rewarding criminality, and law enforcement is punished. I mean, anytime these law enforcement officers dare to uphold the law, I mean, the body cam footage gets leaked. God forbid someone gets hurt. Law enforcement officer makes even the slightest mistake, which, by the way, in these tactical situations where seconds count and lives are on the line, it's not pretty sometimes. But these people, law enforcement officers, are often charged, lives destroyed. The media gang tackles them. And then they start talking about defunding the police. And then you have innocents who might step in to try to save someone who's being robbed or something like that. Well, DAs, while letting criminals off, they'll charge these people. So I don't see a way out of this. And so when you combine this, what I just told you, with the fact that you're going to have a crop of not liberals coming out of these schools, but their views are essentially these kids these college kids that are going to be coming out into the workforce, by and large, are going to be moving to cities, and they're damn near identical in their viewpoints as Nazis. Again, if you think it's bad now, just wait 10 years. So if you are in a city and you have the means to get out, or even if you don't, I think that you should. If you're a business owner, a small business owner, say in the city of Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, if you have the ability to get out, now listen, I know most people will say, well, hey, I don't care. It's just easier to stay. Is it really going to get that bad? Well, I don't know. I'm going to have to, you know, find a new building, move my location. There could be risk inherent in that. Well, I'm just telling you, I can't imagine the situation getting any better in Democrat cities. In fact, I think it's going to get a hell of a lot worse. So if you look, I say this as somebody whose family is from the Steel City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, grew up in a suburb outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I was born at McGee's Women's Hospital in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So like, I get it. It's my family is connected to the Steel City in Pittsburgh. But if you can get out, you should. Because things ain't going to be getting any better in these cities. You want an example of cities and why I think it's going to be very, very difficult to save them. Again, barring some sort of bold leader who comes in and says, nope, this is how it's going to be. And they muscle the Overton window. If they muscle policies back to the right that prioritize keeping people safe and celebrating our law enforcement and incentivizing our law enforcement to keep the peace, things like that. They get rid of you know, cashless bail, so to speak. You want to get a sense of how things are going and why I think cities are just not savable. Look at New York City right now. This headline from Red State. New York City man convicted over gunsmithing hobby after judge says Second Amendment doesn't exist in this courtroom. And I quote, "Do not bring the Second Amendment into this courtroom. It doesn't exist here. So you can't argue Second Amendment. This is New York." Judge Abina Darka. Folks, we have a real, very serious Democrat judge problem here in America. I've told you before, and I will say it again. These people, they don't care about the law. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about evidence. They don't care about norms. This is a woman that said, this is New York. The Second Amendment doesn't exist here. She didn't run for office. She was appointed to the position by Bill de Blasio, who is a freaking communist. And so now we have this communist judge, and this poor guy sent, he's been, I'll read the first paragraph here. His name is Dexter Taylor. Look up this article. New York man convicted over gunsmithing hobby after judge says Second Amendment doesn't exist. This is by Jeff Charles from Red State. But a Brooklyn man has been convicted of 13 weapons charges after having been arrested and charged in 2022. For building his own firearms. Dexter Taylor's ordeal could become a landmark Second Amendment case in light of the Bruen ruling handed down in the same year. The jury found Taylor guilty of second-degree criminal possession of a loaded weapon, 4 counts of third-degree criminal possession of a weapon, and 5 counts of criminal possession of a firearm, second-degree criminal possession of 5 or more firearms, unlawful. I mean, it's this insane. This guy is a software engineer. All he did was discover gunsmithing a couple of years ago. I mean, and then the ATF and the NYPD, a task force there, discovered he was legally buying parts from various companies. They opened up an investigation that led to a SWAT team raid and an arrest. The guy, this poor guy, he's a black guy, by the way. Not that that matters, but, you know, these Democrat judges, they are disgusting racists. Remember that the Democrats, they are the party of the KKK. This poor guy is currently being jailed on Rikers Island as he awaits sentencing. This guy does not have a criminal record. I just think that this is absolutely crazy. And for a judge in a courtroom to say the Second Amendment doesn't exist here, you can't argue the Second Amendment, this is New York, It just gives you a sense of where we are in this country. So you have this case happening in New York. You have pro-genocide protesters at Columbia and NYU and at Ivy League schools all over New York. Columbia actually shut down in-person classes for the rest of the semester because of these genocidal lunatics that are at school there. And even professors are out there in support of these genocidal lunatics. We have a real Democrat extremist problem in this country. We just do. Can you imagine sending your kid to one of these Ivy League universities for $90,000, $100,000 a year, only to find out that in-person classes have been canceled because you have genocidal lunatics on your campus? And not only are the professors not pushing back on it, they're joining in on it. It's insane. We live in an insane time. So all of this is being lionized in New York and being applauded in New York and in the media. The Washington Post calls them anti-war protesters. All the while, you know, this black guy gets sentenced to Rikers Island for gunsmithing, perfectly legal gunsmithing, and you have the persecution of an innocent man of Donald Trump. So there was this exchange between Judge Mershan, who is a Democrat thug and hack, whose family is enriching themselves off of jailing Trump, an exchange between this Democrat hack judge and Trump's attorneys. Todd Blanche, which is Trump's attorney, says this gag order, we are trying to comply with it. There's no doubt that Trump is being very careful with your honor's orders. Judge Mershan, you are losing all credibility with the court. I have to tell you right now, is there anything else that you want to say to this court? So, of course, all of these hack journalists are out there saying, well, it's never a good idea, you know, to have a judge question your credibility in the courtroom. And there I am thinking, like, there is nothing credible about Judge Merchant's courtroom. He has lost all credibility. Don't you think in order for a court to have credibility, that it's set from the top? Judge Merchant sacrificed the credibility of his courtroom a long time ago. Kind of unbelievable to me that we live in the world that we do. And of course, Trump came out and said, hey, I love that he's given the big FU to these judges and talking about this trial. But he says, highly conflicted, to put it mildly, Judge Juan Merchan has taken away my constitutional right to free speech. Everybody is allowed to talk and lie about me, but I'm not allowed to defend myself. This is a kangaroo court, and the judge should recuse himself. So Bragg today talked about Trump in court in violation of the gag order and said that, you know, he requested of Judge Merchan that, hey, you know, maybe let's not actually put Trump in jail. Let's just fine him $10,000 for violating the gag order. And they're also requesting, Bragg is also requesting, that Trump remove 8 Truth Social posts from his social accounts and also his campaign website. So part of me wonders, again, the Democrats, believe me, they would love to throw Trump in jail if they could. But I think they know now that if they put Trump in jail, that America is going to go ballistic. I mean, there damn near could be violence in this country. I don't want that. I hate to see that, but there could be very real violence in America if that happens. But if it does happen, I think the Democrats know that Trump is going to skyrocket in the polls. Of course, he's skyrocketed in the polls since all of this began, right? We know this, right? In fact, there are line graphs out there that show when the political persecution of Trump has happened, right? Like on this date, you know, January of 2024, and then October of 2023, you back it off, and then you see Trump's rise in the polls every time that happens. You end up putting this guy in prison, he's going to skyrocket in the polls. And of course, Dems are out there. Far left Democrat Jayapal is all but admitting that these trials are political persecution. Listen to this.
No, that's right. And somehow that it finds its way into the public, which would be terrible. And, you know, I go back to the responsibility of Congress here, because had the Senate actually gone through with the impeachment of Donald Trump, we would not be in this situation. And I remember Mitch McConnell giving a speech that sounded like he was going to vote for convicting, but he didn't. And he made a lot of arguments that made no sense about why he couldn't, given what he was laying out, given what had been laid out in the impeachment trial. And it really, it is the thing that worries me, upsets me the most about the situation that we are in, is we have to have accountability work. If we don't have accountability work, if there isn't accountability for what Donald Trump did on many levels on January 6th, you know, in this trial, in every possible way, then that will send a message to Americans about what's okay in this country.
So what did Donald Trump do on January 6th? Said, make your voices heard peacefully and patriotically, had a rally. I mean, you see what's happening here. Trump needs these trials need to hold Trump accountable for what he did. Of course, they don't define what exactly he did. And even legal scholars all over the country, even liberal ones, are saying that Pudge Alvin Bragg's case is a complete joke. So what exactly did he do? Nobody knows. The American people know that this is complete BS.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. The
stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
So Bragg, back to Pudge Alvin. He brings his first witness today, and his first witness was a guy named David Pecker. And David Pecker is the former publisher of the National Enquirer. And so far, David Pecker, him being on the stand, was a huge nothing burger. I mean, everyone thought that this was going, oh, they couldn't wait for these Trump witnesses. Oh, they're going to bring, the walls are closing in on Trump. They're going to get him this time. All the testimony, all his, on the stand, all he really confirmed is that Trump is a good guy and he's frugal with his money. Had an agreement with Trump and Cohen, Michael Cohen, that he'd be on the lookout for negative stories about Trump. He would run negative stories on Trump's primary opponents and positive stories about Trump, and he would let them know when this happened. Michael Cohen was involved in many aspects of the campaign and would send opposition research about Trump's opponents to publish. I mean, these are all the things that were discussed while he was on the stand. But I'm here to tell you that none of this, and I mean none of this, is a crime. In fact, all of this is campaign 101. And I want you to also consider the animated corpse in the White House, who to me is guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors and selling America down the river to countries that hate us. Remember that a special prosecutor found Joe Biden to be guilty of mishandling classified information, not while he was president and had declassification authority, but while he was senator and vice president, but basically said he was too old and senile to stand trial. Surely you all can see the double standard that's happening here. And so what I love about Trump the most is that he just does not stop. He doesn't give a damn about these commie Democrats coming after him. And this is why I say Trump is the right man for this moment in our history. I just don't think that there's anybody out there that could handle what's being thrown at him. Like him, I honestly believe he's the only person on earth that could deal with this stuff and come out on top. So here's Trump, walks out of courtroom and just goes after Biden and the judge for 3 straight minutes on CNN. Listen to this.
As we know, there's no cameras there, but you can believe he's going to talk a great deal about how he feels about all of this.
The gag order is totally unconstitutional. Can't even allow articles to be put in. As an example, these are articles that were over the last day and a half. They're very good articles. I tell you, the case is a sham, and it shouldn't even be tried. It shouldn't have been submitted. And I don't even know if you're allowed to put them in. We have a gag order, which to me is totally unconstitutional. I'm not allowed to talk, but people are allowed to talk about me. So they can talk about me. They can say whatever they want. They can lie. But I'm not allowed to say anything. I just have to sit back and look at why a conflicted judge has ordered me to have a gag order. I don't think anybody's ever said anything like this. I'd love to talk to you people. I'd love to say everything that's on my mind, but I'm restricted because I have a gag order. And I'm not sure that anybody's ever seen anything like this before. And even having to do with articles, somebody writes an article. If I read every one of these articles incomplete, I read some of it and I'll look at headlines, all good headlines, that the case is a sham. But I can't read the whole thing. I'd be reading, this is like reading a novel. So I put an article in and then somebody's name is mentioned somewhere deep in the article and I end up in violation of a gag order. I think it's a disgrace. It's totally unconstitutional. I don't believe it's never, not to this extent, ever happened before. I'm not allowed to defend myself, and yet other people are allowed to say whatever they want about me. Very, very.
He goes on for like another minute and 20 seconds, but he's exactly right, as usual. And what's crazy is I don't think the Democrats want Trump to testify in this trial. In fact, I think they're petrified of him testifying. In fact, Merchan said that if Trump testifies, Bragg, Pudge Alvin, can bring up the E. Jean Carroll judgment, the fraud case, and the $500 million fine over valuing his assets, and the Georgia federal election cases. Remember down there with Big Fanny, basically saying that Bragg will be able to bring up all this unrelated information just to smear, you guessed it, Trump. Typically, you're not allowed to prejudice a jury by bringing up all of this unrelated stuff. But in Juan Merchan's court, you're allowed to do it because it's almost like he's a disgusting political communist hack that's destroying this country. Oh, that's right. He is. Okay. So other news about Lawfare. Let's segue very quickly to the classified documents case and Judge Cannon. Yesterday, I played some sound for you about Dana Bash saying,
I'm sorry, Kristi Noem. There's actually, there's no evidence that Biden's involved in any of this stuff.
And of course, when she said that, I about spit out my coffee because there is a ton of evidence to the that Biden is at the center of all of this stuff. Not the least of which is the fact that the number three at the DOJ, Compangelo, an attorney that worked for, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name, and I don't pronouncing his name right, and I don't care, but he was the number three at the DOJ, takes a demotion, goes to work with Pudge Alvin, and is now leading a state prosecution just to get Trump. Like, that's proof enough that Biden's involved in this case. But now it's just beyond a shadow of a doubt because Judge Cannon in the classified documents case unredacted all this info that the Department of Justice hoped would be able to keep private. And this is for Julie Kelly. Who, by the way, is extraordinary, had her ear to the ground throughout this entire process. She's fantastic. She says, outrageous lies by Joe Biden, Attorney General Merrick Garland, and DOJ Jack Smith about independence from investigations into Trump. The Biden White House and Department of Justice were intimately involved in developing a criminal case against Trump for records mismanagement. It appears the first go-around related to alleged destruction of government papers, contrary to the public and legal assertions. Nara was working with the Department of Justice and the White House to craft a criminal referral by September 2021, 5 months before the official referral by Nara to the Department of Justice in February 2022. And so she goes on to say that now you know why insiders like Andrew Weissman and Barb McQuaid were desperate to get rid of Judge Cannon without her courage on this matter, incriminating evidence of Biden's White House and the Department of Justice running the investigative show behind the scenes would be buried maybe forever. The Department of Justice told Nara what to do to cover their tracks. And here's another thing that I think is just so interesting. The president of the United States is the ultimate declassification authority. There's no question that he can point to a piece of paper and say that this is declassified and I'm taking it with me. The president has that power. Vice president, senators don't have that power, which is why Joe Biden was guilty of this crime and Trump is not. However, so much of the Department of Justice and beady-eyed little freak Jack Smith, the prosecutor, the special prosecutor, so much of his argument revolves around the fact, well, Trump wasn't president. He had these documents. He wasn't president anymore. He's not covered by, he doesn't have declassification authority anymore. And of course, that's such a ridiculous, bogus excuse, and any skilled lawyer would be able to poke a million holes in it. But my point is that the Biden Department of Energy, they were also involved in the cover-up, because the Department of Energy discovered after Smith indicted Trump that Trump also still had an active security clearance. Not that he needed it, but he still had an active security clearance. So the Department of Energy retroactively terminated that security clearance to cover their tracks. I mean, look, he's the president. He doesn't need a security clearance, but he had classified documents. He had a security clearance. The Department of Energy, when given, like, hey, the finger in the chest by the Biden administration, hey, what are you going to do about this? He has a security clearance. Oh, we'll retroactively terminate it. I mean, this entire thing is a complete and total sham. Okay. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about a Trump's second term. I'm running out of time. I need a longer show. What I don't get to on the cutting room floor, I'll cover tomorrow. Let me do a quick lightning round here and just say that Trump needs to be a wrecking ball in his second term. It's not enough just to win. Trump has to be that transformative leader that uses the office of president to actually lead and save this country. If not, we will be embroiled in 10 to 15, 20 years of war. We might even find ourselves in a civil war. I'm telling you, people are taught. I don't want that. I never want to see that. I hope it never happens. But it seems like we're on a path with a collision course with these radical communist leftists who want to destroy this country. Yes, that's exactly what they want to do. A clash between those people and just people who love this country and want to preserve America for their children. It's going to require actual leadership to get us back on that pass. And Trump needs to be that guy. And so in that same vein, a couple things happened today. You had the Senate pass the aid package for Ukraine and for Taiwan and for Israel, which, again, not a surprise. Republicans do a terrible job at representing their constituents. But Thomas Massey came out prior to the Senate vote and said that there was, because Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, said that, oh, I had a meeting in the SCIF and, our intelligence community changed my perspective on FISA 702. And because they changed my perspective, I'm going to make sure it gets passed. And because of that, I'm going to make sure we fund Ukraine and fund wars all over the world, much to the chagrin of conservative voters all over the place. Well, Massey said today in an interview that there was no Johnson SCIF meeting. Said that Johnson himself said that SCIF meetings were a waste of time. And so Johnson then came out after the video and said that he would fine Massey if he didn't take down the Ukraine flag waving video, which we showed right here on the show yesterday. Thomas Massey filmed it on the House floor. They passed Ukraine aid, all these Democrats chanting Ukraine or Slava Ukraini, waving these Ukrainian flags on the House floor, was largely disgusting. I threw up in my mouth when I saw it. But instead of punishing the Ukrainian flag waver, Speaker Johnson is now threatening to fine Thomas Massey. And Thomas Massey said, instead of fining Democrats for waving flags, the House Sergeant at Arms just called and said, I will be fined $500 if I don't delete this video post. And Thomas Massey says, Mike Johnson really wants to memory hold this betrayal of America. And I agree. It's hard to argue with Massey here. And this brings me to this point. Trump came out yesterday or today and said that Johnson was doing a good job. This leaves me scratching my head a little bit, but there's a political reason why this is actually happening. Johnson needs the Trump base, and so Trump is trying to be kind for him, to him. But Trump needs the Speaker of the House to work with him when he wins a second term. So he doesn't want to make the Speaker of the House mad. I've heard from people that Trump is not really happy about this Ukraine stuff. But Trump doesn't want to alienate Republicans in the House because his agenda, by and large, will start in the U.S. House of Representatives. And if Trump wins, it's very, very likely that Republicans will win at the ballot box all over America. And the hope is that Republicans will expand their majority in the U.S. House of Representatives with Trump as president. And I think the Senate map this go around is much more favorable for Republicans. I really do believe that Republicans will take back the Senate this go around. So we could have ourselves a situation with Trump in the White House, the Republicans controlling the House of Representatives, Republicans controlling the U.S. Senate. Let's hope that they don't screw it up like the first 2 years Trump was in office. But something tells me that might not happen. We've got lots of great America First people now kind of taking control. And if Trump wins in November, I think a lot of America First people will win with him. So who knows what that will look like? But I like the fact that Republicans could control all three, you know, executive branch, House, and Senate. And oh, by the way, probably a few more Supreme Court justices appointed, which would essentially put the Supreme Court out of reach for Democrats for the rest of my life, certainly. And so I think the reason why Trump is coming out and saying that is because he needs Johnson, he needs Mike Johnson, and he needs Republicans in the House of Representatives. His agenda is going to start there. But I guess I'll leads me to this point here. Trump is up in the polls, but Biden has the deck stacked in his favor. Just think about all the things that I covered on the show today. Biden has a massive fundraising advantage. That matters. In politics, it does. It helps you get your message out. He has all of the elites. The elites have money. The elites have power. The elites occupy positions of power. They use that power to help Biden. Remember the secret shadow campaign to win the 2020 presidency in Time magazine, where you had unions partnering with these elites, many of whom were Republicans, to rig the 2020 election and cheat Trump out of the White House. Biden has the schools. Biden has the billionaires. He has all the same cultural pull that he had in 2020. And oh, by the way, he has the power of the presidency. Who's Trump have? Trump has us. Trump has we the people. That's it. And we need to rise up now, every day, every single day until election day in order to win. Again, remember what I said. The 2024 election is one battle in what is a much, much larger war. It's going to get worse. If Trump wins, it's just one battle. That's a big win. We need him in there, but we've got to keep fighting even after that. We don't get any breaks. So let me tell you real quickly, I'll talk to you about the Pennsylvania primary here and why I think Pennsylvania has a real strong chance of going Republicans. We'll leave that on the cutting room floor for tonight, and I'll talk to you about that tomorrow. And Savage Rich, by the way, just so you're tracking everybody, he'll be on Thursday this week, not Wednesday. Just want to keep that out there. And maybe we'll talk about Pennsylvania with Savage Rich. Okay, robot dogs. This is not going to end well for us, is it? I've got to show you. This thing is named Throw Flame. And by the way, all of these robots, like at Boston Dynamics, the ones that like can run around, like actually they walk more nimble somehow than Joe Biden, but their gait is kind of the same. They kind of like shuffle around. They don't actually take steps. They just kind of shuffle like a demented Joe Biden. But these Boston Dynamic videos freak me out. So I'm going to talk about this on the show because it freaks me out and I want you to know about it. But look at this flame-throwing dog.
Death, the destroyer of worlds.
Let me just tell you something. And for those who were listening, I know it's probably hard to figure out. That was just basically a robot dog that was jumping around and spewing fire from a nozzle on its head. What possible application that could have, I don't know. Outside of burning people's houses down and attacking people, I don't know. I mean, but I see myself going down in a blaze of glory one day facing one of those things. It's these things scare me. Again, just because we can and we have the technology to do it doesn't mean that we should. And I saw somebody in the live chat saying that Google bought Boston Dynamics. I hope that's not the case, because generally speaking, I don't like Google at all. Not generally speaking, I don't like Google at all. But anyways, folks, thank you for watching. I appreciate you indulging my fears of flame-throwing robot dogs. They scare me. And I want you to share that fear. I don't know. But anyways, thank you all for watching. We've got a great show planned for you tomorrow. Please come back tomorrow night. We love having you here. And get in the live chat at 4 o'clock. We mix it up in the live chat about an hour before the show. Make sure that you like this video. Like this video. It helps the show a lot. Tell your family and your friends to subscribe to Battleground Live. If you are our friends who are listening wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, make your way over to Rumble. Subscribe to or follow Battleground Live. We'd love to have you here in the live chat with us. And we love when people watch the show live. So come on over here, subscribe to my channel on Battleground Live with Sean Parnell. Again, folks, I'll see you tomorrow. I have a great show planned for you. As always, thank you all so much for watching. God bless you all, and God bless this exceptional nation that we call home. Take care and good night. See you tomorrow.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.